Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell-Pogurski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell-Pogurski, and I'll be your host today on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So all you need to do is check out that Pacific time and calculate your time zone accordingly. And you can listen in live because we go on at this time, the first and third Sundays, and we are live. I guess I don't know what you call us when it's rebroadcast, but anyhow. So another fork in the road is for anyone with a brain injury. It's for anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or for anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. And folks, believe me, it does. Somebody right now in your world, nearby, is experiencing a brain injury. It's sad, but it's true. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks do not even know about brain injury, and I know I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks to understand what survivors and caregivers experience. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors, lots of authors, to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on each first Sunday of the month, I host a discussion panel or a talk with another person to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, neural fatigue, anger, suicide ideation. There are so many things, various symptoms of brain injury, and we do talk about those throughout the year. For those of you who are new to my show, here's just a little snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005. That was 19 years ago, almost 19 years ago, when my husband David had a brain injury. And you can learn more about that on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. It's a three-time award-winning blog, so check it out. There's lots of good stuff on it if you want to learn more about brain injury. I'll tell you all that later, but there's a lot of stuff there, so go just check it out. But I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show, on Another Fork in the Road, starting way back in August of 2014. So we're heading into our 10th year for this show. Oh, and that brings me to, ta-da, drum roll, because I always, always, always forget how many shows I have done. But tonight, we're celebrating my 200th show on the Brain Injury Radio Network on Another Fork in the Road. Is that cool? That is so cool. I'm so excited. 200th show. But when I started, and that starts from August 2014, that's what reminded me to even tell you that. So I interviewed David on my show to get his perspective And I also did a show just with me, you know, with me just talking about how we got here. How did I get into this position of being a caregiver for my husband, David, who had a brain injury? And then David also has done some shows, and he does a lot of scientific work on here, especially during COVID. When COVID was going down for those 2 years, or actually still not over, but the horrendous part of it when we were all locked down, David was translating basically a lot of scientific documents. He'd read them. He'd understand them, of course, because of this. He was a professor of microbiology at Columbia University, so he knows all that nitty-gritty foreign language of science that was you know, being used by all kinds of scientists across the nation, across the world, I should say. And so he would break it down into layman's and laywoman's terms so we could actually understand some of the things that the scientists were saying about what was happening. So there are a lot of things like that on the website, too. So check it out. You can find all my archived shows on my blog, the archived Another Fork in the Road shows, on survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And this is where I always remember to say, get a pencil, have a paper nearby so you can jot these names down, these URLs, so that you can check them out later. Not now, folks, but later. That would be great. And then if you want to get to the show archives, just go to On the Air Show Menu. You have to go to the show menu because that will show you all 200 shows that I have done. So you've got a wide pick of guests that you might want to hear from, authors who wrote books about it because either they were the survivor or they were the caregiver, medical professionals, as I said. There are all kinds of things and a lot of panel shows just discussing the topics. So we'd have a lot of people jumping in and talking about everything. So check it out. It's really kind of fun. So, let's see. I've got timers on my phone here, and I don't really need them anymore. But that's what you're hearing going off. So anyhow, if you want to learn more about David, just click in the search box and just type Figurski, David Figurski, Figurski. You can also read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And that was published by Right Life Publishing and released in November of 2018. So my book has celebrated its fifth birthday. And you can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as a print book, as an e-book, so you can read it on your Kindle or your tablet, and as an audio book. So you get to hear me, because I was lucky enough to be able to do the audio for this book. It was I was really very fortunate that I was my editor and publishing company promoted that, I do that. So that was cool. So but you must know that you can find all these books at your local book hunt, you know, so your local indie store or your local library or online, of course, easy to get. And when you read it, please, 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 please write a review on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, and on Goodreads. Those are three really good places. And a review is a book's best friend. It helps to let others know about a good read. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me and my book. And actually, if you go there, go to DonnaFigurski.com. It's DonnaFigurski. Then click on book or prisoners, whatever is up and up. There's three little lines there that will take you to the menu. And prisoners, and then you can go down and scroll down and find cast of characters. And you can see almost all of the characters that were in the book. Not some, because nurses, random nurses and things like that, I couldn't get in. But the main characters in the book, and there must be about 20 to 30 of them sitting on that page, that were actually written into the book. So it's kind of interesting to see what the people look like who you're reading about. So check it out. So I hope tonight that you're going to find my show fun and informative, and I hope that you'll also visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network. There are shows between 7 and 10 p.m. on weekdays, and on the weekend you can tune in at 5:30 p.m. Again, this is all Pacific time, to listen to your favorite shows as well. Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States. In every state you can find us, and in 36 countries. But you can also find us on the web. So go to that Blog Talk Radio and look for Another Fork in the Road on the Brain Injury Radio Network. And, yeah, you can find our shows, and you, even if you're living, as long as you've got Wi-Fi and you can get in, you can hear it. So now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show that we have planned for you tonight. And tonight we're going to talk about how do you deal with the holidays after brain injury, or 'tis the season to be jolly. You know, wow. Even if you have a brain injury, yeah, because that's a little trickier. It's a little trickier thing. But we're going to focus on talking about the holidays, and there are so many winter holidays coming up right now. And we're going to talk about how we prepare for them and what we expect them to be, and how we deal with them after someone, either we ourselves or someone in our family or close family friends have a brain injury. And how can we survive all that and still have fun during the holidays? So, frankly, you know, we just finished Thanksgiving, and I know many of us are still feeling the effects of that holiday, of that turkey day, the bloated bellies, the travel weariness for some, because that's actually, I think, the biggest holiday for travel. So it's one of the days that I'm not sure I want to ever get on a plane. So travel weariness is probably affecting a lot of people, and jet lag. Even though you might be going just a little bit away, it takes a lot of energy to get on that plane, get prepared to get on that plane, to get to the airport, et cetera. So, then there's the family parties that go with all the holidays. And now we have more winter holidays coming, the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. New Year's are right around the corner. Diwali, Ramadan. I can't even tell you all of them because I frankly don't remember all of them. But, so they're all right around here. The winter holidays, the holidays of light, many of them are called. And holidays are supposed to be fun. But they also include their share of stress and frustration. Even if you don't have a brain injury, it can cause stress and frustration. Many extra responsibilities are thrust upon us. Buying presents, cooking special dinners, entertaining extended family members, and frolicking at office or family parties are some of the things that you have to do with a smile, that have to be done with a smile. You just do them. You got to get through it. And for those living with a brain injury who just barely get by in their daily life, this time of the year, and any holiday for that matter, can be a nightmare. Now, if you live with somebody who has a brain injury, or you are a person, you will relate to that statement very easily. The extra fuss and bother, the excitement, the parties and noise, they can throw a person right off track. You know, just getting to a day might be really hard. So how do folks with brain injury, an injury that has forever altered their lives, deal with all the happy, smiling faces around them? How hard is it to put on a happy face when you are in pain, whether it be physical pain or emotional pain? It's not easy. And what if you're the parent of little kids, little children, and you've got, and they have their expectations for the holiday, and you feel pressured to meet those expectations? Wow, that really adds some stress to your life. So, as I said, it's not easy. So on today's show, 'tis the season to be jolly, even with a brain injury, we're going to talk about how folks deal with the holidays And maybe we'll even hear a few suggestions on how to make the holidays less overwhelming. For this show, some friends from social media agreed to share their thoughts and suggestions on this talk, and so I'm really grateful to them. But tonight I want to introduce you, now I want to introduce you to my panelist, and that would be my friend Deb Brandon. Deb is a brain injury survivor and the author of her book, But My Brain Had Other Ideas, a memoir of recovery from brain injury. Deb is a recently retired professor of mathematics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And I always like to say that's my old stomping grounds. I was born outside of Pittsburgh, and I went to college there. So Pittsburgh has a warm spot in my heart, even though it's rather cold right now in the winter months. But anyhow, you can read about Deb on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Again, look for that search box and type her name, Deb Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N. A Survivor Speak Out interview will pop up, and so will several shows that Deb has been on Another Fork in the Road. And she's appeared on many of the panel shows as well here. So you can learn lots more about her there. And you can also check out her own website, debbrandon.com, and, you know, and see what you want to find out about Deb. She has another book out, but I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to go to her website to find out. And also Deb and I are co-authoring a book right now, and we're more than halfway through our chapter summaries of Surviving Brain Injury Together. Tell me the rest of it, Deb. Did I say the first part right?
Yeah, Surviving Brain Injury Together. Remember something like a conversation between survivor and caregiver, maybe?
Yeah, I think something like that.
It's
a working title. We don't have it completely down yet. It's changed already 3 or 4 times. So anyhow, we're working on that. We're getting through it, and hopefully we can't wait for you to be able to read it once it gets published. And believe me, we'll let you know. So anyhow, let's get started on today's show. Are we going to be jolly during the show? I don't know. But I want to say, wow, where did the year go? We're into December already. It seems like we just started on 2023, and here we're getting to ready to welcome the surprises and the new beginnings of the year 2024 has to offer. Yep. Time is flying by, and the holidays are here again, making more time passing. Like I said, Thanksgiving seems to be the kickoff day for the beginning of the winter holidays, and we're past that by a couple weeks already now, so we're just going to look forward and keep on moving. And I'll tell you a little bit about our Thanksgiving. David and I spent our Thanksgiving, as we've been doing for the past many years, probably 10 years, with family, and as always, it was nice. David is fine with being in larger crowds for a short time, but it can get overwhelming and exhausting if we overdo it. And I know many of you out there listening are shaking your head. Oh, yes. I've seen where he comes a little a little more uncomfortable and is ready to bolt. But it was good. And one of the comfortable things for him is that during this Thanksgiving feast that we go to every year, he knows what to expect. He knows the people who will be there, and he is usually familiar with the house we are visiting. And this year was no different. And the weather was beautiful, and we all gathered around the long table set out in the backyard. So it was a lovely day visiting with family and friends, and, of course, eating turkey. Oh, my God, that was such a good turkey this year. So still, it's always good to return home to familiarity and the quiet. And, and so after we drive home about an hour and open that door, we just sigh that sigh of relief that we are back in our little cocoon and feeling a lot more comfortable. So, Deb, I hope you didn't eat too much turkey, as I did. How was your turkey day? Well, anything
first
special?
Of all, we went up to France about 2 hours away, and they had the most fabulous turkey I've ever had. It was deep fried.
Oh,
I don't know if you've ever had that, but it is amazing.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people, and I did have a lot of trouble, and it was a huge sigh of relief when it was over. So, it was a bit rough.
That seems to be the case with things like that. You know, they're always fun to go to, they're kind of fun to anticipate, and then, but it's a lot of work. You know, it's just not, you know, you have to keep up your end of the conversation. You're talking to lots and lots of different people. Many times you're standing as opposed to sitting and relaxing while you're chatting, or maybe holding a drink in your hand or a plate of hors d'oeuvres or whatever. You know, so it's a little bit tricky to do all of that. Most people don't think twice about it. You know, if you don't have a brain injury, you don't really need to think twice about it, pretty much. But with somebody who's trying to just juggle keeping afloat, it's a little rough.
Yeah.
So with the winter holidays just around the corner, I want to talk about parties that often happen. I know when I was teaching, when I was still in school, we always had the classroom party, of course, which took a lot of extra preparation and getting ready for getting ready for the holidays, decorating my class with turkeys for Thanksgiving and dreidels for Hanukkah and Christmas trees or ice cream, not ice cream cones, candy canes, and or maybe for just plain winter, just snow people. You know, so there was always the extra stuff going on, the extra excitement. And, of course, that excitement also enhanced the energy of my children but in the classroom, my first graders. But and then, of course, there's the party that where all the teachers and the administrators all go out to dinner and have a party out there. And that's, you know, you're always having a little bit of tension there, like, who am I going to sit with? You know, there are a lot of teacher cliques and things like that, so people knew where they were going to sit. But if you weren't really involved in a clique and you free-reigned and knew a lot of people, it was always a little tricky. And I kind of did that sort of thing where I just was friends with a lot of people but not cliquey in the clique kind of thing. So that was always a little tense. So, those are just kinds of things that you have to deal with. And for the most part, parties are fun. And folks look forward to seeing and sharing time with their friends. And meeting new folks, too, is always fun, too. But they can be loud and raucous, and they can cause havoc for survivors of brain injury. And I checked with some friends on social media to get their input on how they feel about the holidays. So Rachel said, and I'm quoting now, "It can be so easy to feel overwhelmed with questions, noise, and everything the holiday brings. But taking breaks really helps." And, end quote. And that sounds like good advice to me. Deb, knowing you, I'm sure that Rachel's comments resonate with you. Can you talk about, like you just said, you went to a big to-do over Thanksgiving. What do you do when you just get overwhelmed?
Well, there was a little girl there, very cute, 5-year-old. And normally I'll hang out with the kids quite happily because it's staying away from the confusing conversations around me.
Mm-hmm.
But this little 5-year-old, every so often she'd let out a shriek. It was a happy shriek, but it was still a shriek. And I did not know how to deal with it because, with my issues with having trouble filtering out high volume sensory input, one of the things it does to me is it jams up my neural pathways. And I very, in many cases, I don't have the ability to escape the bad situation. I mean, my motor skills just don't work properly.
Uh-huh.
My communication skills aren't good. So
I was a very cute 5-year-old, but I was sitting there and I was stuck with it. And
yeah,
this was before we started eating. Luckily, at one point, somebody interfered and asked me something that I could handle, and that got me away from that situation. But it was really tough, and I didn't. Another guest came, whom this girl knew, and she was doing her shrieking with him, so I could stay away. But sometimes I have a way of dealing with it. I have to, you know, I have to sort of bear with it. And that's what happens. And normally, in the past, I would have been fine with it. No problem at all. I would have continued playing with her. But I just couldn't. And when a bunch of the guests went over in the corner after the meal, I joined them just to be away from the cacophony. But
that's a tough one because, you know, you understood, you know, kids are going to make noise, you know, and they do shriek, you know, and they do a lot of weird things. and you don't want to, admonish them for it, you know, and you also don't want the parents to get upset because you're telling their child something. So it is a little tricky. It's a little tricky situation there. It's good that you were able to find another spot to go to that wasn't within her, you know, shrieking area. So another thing is so often, especially when the brain injury survivor does not look like they have a brain injury, it's hard for family members or friends to think that there is anything wrong. So they can't see the wheels spinning out of control in the brain of their survivor when that noise gets too loud. So no one really comes over and kind of gets you out of it. You know, you're kind of on your own there. They can't see the chaos in their brain injury survivor's brain either when he or she is trying to focus on too many questions. So when you're, as Rachel said before, there's just so many questions that people have, you know, and that's typical when you're in a conversation. Your first question, hi, how are you? And then what have you been doing lately, or anything fun happening, or what did you hear what so-and-so said? And you know, just going on, and there's questions that you have to come up with answers for. And so that's really can be taxing on the brain for somebody who is having some challenge with the noise and the extra stimulation. So people don't actually know that it is completely impossible for the brain injury survivor's brain to discriminate between the nonstop conversations going on around them. So I always like to think about a kaleidoscope. Have you ever used a kaleidoscope, one of those tubes that you look through, and when you see at the end of it, all the pictures are falling into new shapes? They're just a bunch of colorful shapes. And so imagine a kaleidoscope, never stopping long enough to figure out what the picture is or see the actual shape. And that might be a good description of a holiday party or a gathering that a survivor of brain injury is attending. Can you relate to that at all, Deb? Have you seen it? You know what a kaleidoscope is, don't you?
Yeah.
Well,
I tend to be, when everything is hitting at once, I tend to, well, as you said, I get overwhelmed and I can't differentiate between details for instance, if there are lots of conversations going on around me, I end up tuning out because I actually literally cannot hear what people are saying. You know, you could talk to me till you're blue in the face and I'm just staring at you, trying to look as if I'm listening, but nothing, it sounds like gobbledygook to me. And when if I realize that someone's asking me a question, I will look blank. And I have done that in the past. I mean, it's just my, and I'm looking blank because my brain has shut down. There's nothing going on. I mean, it's dark in there. You know, no twinkling lights or anything. They wanted, so after dinner, they wanted to play some party games. And I forget, there was one where whoever was suggesting that, it was so complicated, and I'm going, I'm not playing this. I don't know what all this is. So I just sat back and watched because I couldn't make sense of anything at that point. It was fun to watch because I was sitting next to a guy who, you know, his attention was elsewhere, and then every so often someone would turn to him, and he'd look at me, and I'd look at him, and we, at least I had that. But it's... I check out. Sometimes I choose to check out. Other times, I refer to it as the bloody brain, because my brain injuries because of brain hemorrhages, and the bloody brain checks out for me. You know, as I said, I mean, I've been in situations where it's shut down on me and somebody's turned to me with a question. And maybe if I do notice that I'm supposed to do something at that point, there's nothing there to go on.
I know. People don't realize that happens to people, you know, that you just tune out. I know after a certain time in the evening now, David will just like, he doesn't actually tune out, but I just know he's not going to be as attentive to things, you know. He stops his work, let's put it that way. He'll work for a good portion of the day, and then after that he's just like, that's it. My brain's done. It's not going to do much. I mean, he'll do it, but it's going to be very, very difficult and uncomfortable. So he just has learned. And that's relatively recently that he's learned that, there is a reason why it's becoming so difficult. Something that was not hard for him before is now very difficult to do. And he could do it when he first got up in the morning, but it's not easy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's becoming convoluted. So he's learned to stop and do other things that he can do. You know, so it's a learning curve, I think, too, where people have to realize what they are capable of doing in a comfortable situation without the stress and overwhelming portion of your life just coming down on you, you know. So I think that's one of the, you know, things that he's learned to do. But when you're at a party, you're kind of in the bubble. You're in that whole big thing, and you're I don't know, whatever I want to say. You're almost like that kaleidoscope where everything is inside that tube and moving, and you're there with it, and you're moving with it,
something that a lot of people don't understand. I mean, for instance, yesterday I mentioned to you that I went to a basketball game with friends, and it wasn't overly cool. And we sat pretty isolated. It wasn't terrible. I seemed to be doing well, and everything was fine. And then I got home, and I was beyond exhausted. And everything was triggering, you know. My friends were watching TV, and I couldn't stand being in the same room with it. When I'm dealing with overload, with sensory overload, I become hypersensitive to any kind of input. So having the TV in the same room normally doesn't bother me that much, but I just couldn't take it. I had to leave. And I slept for 9.5 hours straight. It was so exhausting.
Wow.
Just from that relatively quiet basketball game. It took me by surprise.
Yeah, that was...
Which it shouldn't. It shouldn't take me by surprise. I should be used to it by now. But this is something that you just don't get used to. And one of the things with brain injury survivors, people may not realize, as you said, you know, some of this stuff is internal. You're not going to notice it unless you're watching for it.
Right.
And we do a lot of things like your average neurotypical person would do, but it takes more out of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, just to have you go to sleep, I mean, I wish I haven't slept for 9.5 hours solid, and I can't tell you when, but to sleep that long was your body telling you it needed it. Your brain was restoring itself, you know, while you were resting, while you were sleeping, and you weren't using it actively, and it needed that to just rejuvenate.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, and that is something that I've heard many, many times from many survivors that will say that if they choose to do something on a particular day, they're going to pay for it the next day and maybe even more than that. They're going to pay for it. David has a cousin who is not diagnosed with a brain injury, although I think that she probably has one from a car accident a long time ago. But that's what will happen to her, too. If she goes out to dinner with her family for a couple of hours, she's going to pay for it the next day by not being able to do much of anything. You know, and she's, I've heard this over and over from so many people that they have to be careful of what they plan in their days, or, you know, they're going to lose time. They're going to lose time either by sleeping it off or just being unable to budge from the couch or whatever, you know. So, yeah, you have to think about that. So I wanted to go into a couple things that a few of my social media people have said, because I think it's fun to get their input on this topic as well. And Katie said that when things get too loud and raucous at family gatherings, she has to excuse herself. And then she usually feels guilty for not being with her family because it was a special event, you know? And then the depression sets in. And so for Katie, it's almost like a catch-22 cycle. And it seems like a high price to pay, I think. Debbie says, and she says something that you told me earlier, that she uses earplugs when the noise gets to be too much. And you mentioned that before we got on the show, Deb. She also uses breathing techniques to help calm herself down when she feels anxious. And both of those strategies are really good ones, but because you can easily affect or change your environment on your own. And probably, depending on you as a person with a brain injury, and depending on the extent of the noise or the situation, I imagine that it could be, you know, if it's an easier thing, you can probably affect a change more easily, you know, while using breathing techniques. I know that I even do that. Sometimes when I get overwhelmed, I'm sitting at a light and I'm getting frustrated because I'm going to be late for the appointment I'm trying to get to, and I can't do anything about it. I have to sit there, you know, so I just start breathing. In and out slowly, in and out. And I focus on that, and that relaxes me a little bit. It doesn't get me to the appointment any sooner, but it does relax me a little bit. So it's amazing how such a little action can help to change your disposition. And then Kim says that her family pretty much knows that she doesn't do well in big crowds or with noise anymore after her injury. So she's allowed to escape to someplace quiet if her family is having a gathering. But I wonder how Kim got her family to understand that. And I think more survivors need to know Kim's trick, because I think that if Katie knew Kim's trick, she wouldn't feel so guilty for having to, you know, go find a quiet spot. So, Deb, do you have any secrets that you use when you become overwhelmed? No, I just mentioned your earplugs, but what else do you do? And maybe talk about the earplugs, too.
I mean, some people wear dark glasses because...
I think I'm losing you. You're a little quiet there.
A lot of people wear dark glasses, and that helps. I haven't done that because sometimes the light is a bit too harsh. For instance, what are they called? Neon lights can be really tough. I'm trying to think what else. I usually alert people ahead of time that I might be in that kind of situation, and if they see me shut down in some ways, suddenly go really quiet, or I've been told I look like a deer caught in the headlight. So I warn them ahead of time, and I've been, in that kind of situation. I usually set it up so that there's someone there who can take me away from the situation. Like you did that time at the book fair. But in general, setting up a safety net ahead of time, the only way, with my family, if I go visit them, they know that there are times when I need to be shuttled over to somewhere more quiet. But not everyone is in tune with that kind of thing. So they may know it, but they won't notice the symptoms, or they may not think, may not put two and two together, that kind of thing. So it doesn't always work. I've been in situations where I've stood still, like frozen, and tears streaming down my cheeks because I can't communicate, I can't move, I'm basically frozen, and there was no one there to notice. But once you start crying, people do notice. There's usually someone who will walk up to you and, make sure that you're okay. But again, if you can't communicate, how do you convey that? So it's a tough situation. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine it would be. And especially when you're going to, I know you go to visit your daughter, and she has a little two-year-old running around. So I'm sure there's times where you might have to escape to your bedroom for a little while, because much as you want to be there and play with that two-year-old, it can get to be overwhelming. I have a two-year-old also running around. My two-year-old just turned two last week. And, there's a lot of energy there with those little ones. And you want to get them the best that you can. But when you're feeling overwhelmed, you're not going to be able to do that until you recoup, re-energize, reboot yourself, and then you're ready to go. So that escape door is a welcome tool, basically, to get you through your days.
Well, I'll tell you something. When I go visit my daughter and granddaughter, I sleep very well there because it does take a lot out of me.
Sure it does. So another friend of mine, Rachel, talks about times that her family refuses to be patient with her. And that's got to be completely frustrating, and it must feel really hurtful when people don't understand the problems that a survivor faces each day. I'm assuming, and I don't know this now because I'm not talking to Rachel right, I can't ask her right now. But Rachel says that, when she, has she explained this to her family? Have they have communication times together so that they can understand what's going on? Or do they just look at her and say, well, you look fine, there shouldn't be anything wrong with you? I don't know that. But those are some of the things that many survivors have to deal with. But Rachel says that she has, and I'm quoting now, learned that it's best to just walk away, and that's an unquote. She says that she doesn't need to spend energy on something that does not promote her recovery. I think she's got a good head on her shoulders there, thinking about how to keep herself in good shape. And I like this comment that Rachel sent, and I'm quoting again, holiday or not, my healing must always be a priority. And I think that Rachel is right on track with that. I think that people who are having difficulties in life with a brain injury have to consider themselves first so that they can maneuver through their life in the least difficult way. you know, because it's not easy. I mean, the survivor is learning right along the way with anyone else, and it's affecting them, and they have to adjust A, B, and C just to get through their day. So, so they have to take care of themselves. So, Deb, I know that you would agree with healing always being a priority. What do you do in your life to make that happen?
What do I do in my life to make that happen? I live a fairly quiet life, to tell you the truth. I socialize more than I used to. This past year I started socializing more. But still, you know, I keep it relatively short. My day is, I'm at home most of the day. In the evening, sometimes I go out briefly. That's about it, you know. And lots of days I don't go out. And sometimes I'm a bit of a hermit, and it suits me fine. I mean, the lockdowns with COVID were actually, for me, I found out through that just how much being around people affected me.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to, not having to make excuses for myself was quite refreshing. I mean, it was, and the world was quiet. And for me, that was a good thing. As I said, I try to keep my world as quiet as possible, but I want to live. I don't just want to be there like a invalid. So there are times when I will risk, something like sensory overload or a debilitating.
Or the basketball game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there are times when I'll just. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like I sit back and go, oh, my God, I can't do anything, so I'm just going to be at home and, you know, be an invalid. I do stuff. I go out quite a bit. But a lot of the stuff.
Oh, you just traveled to Europe about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. And it was wonderful. It was beyond wonderful. And again, I paid for it afterwards, but that was fine. It was worth it, well worth it. And that's how I do a lot of risk management. I mean, on a daily basis, I do a risk management. I mean, for instance, after the basketball game, as I said, today was kind of iffy. So the basketball game was yesterday. And this morning, my balance was not quite right. I had issues with vertigo. So I could tell that something wasn't right. And at one point I'm telling myself, what on earth is going on? And then my brain goes, slaps me over the back of my head and says, wait.
Remember?
So, yeah. Well, that's part of the fun thing is, you know, on the one hand, the bloody brain taketh away, but on the other hand, it giveth. So in other words, when you have a lousy short-term memory, you know, I don't remember the bad stuff. So in many ways, I live in the moment. So it's a balancing act. It really is. And there are times, as you said, when people don't understand. Well, people like that, I tend to minimize my time with them because I don't, you know, what's the point? But in general. But as I said, it's a balancing act. It's a constant risk management. And after a while, you know, you get used to it and it just becomes part of who you are. So should I go out? Well, let's see. Maybe not. Maybe something seems a bit off. No, you stay home today, you know, that kind of thing.
So, during the holidays, because there are so many, you know, just so many things that are going on, getting ready for festive dinners or, you know, meeting people with Hanukkah. People have 8 days of celebration, I guess it is. And I don't know if you celebrate all 8 days. I think some people probably do, maybe within families.
Well,
lighting the candles.
Yeah, I used to every night, but now I don't every night. And and also I keep it to a minimum in the sense, I mean, if I'm around family, which just doesn't happen often because they're all spread all over,
right.
I keep it so I can do as little or as much as I want, which is really nice. But,
yeah.
I mean, for instance, with Christmas, I have been in really, really bad situations and haven't been able to communicate it to someone, and it's been, but, I mean, this Christmas, we're not going anywhere. We're just going to keep things quiet, which I really need that.
Yeah, you know, and that's okay. I know when our children, my children were little, we went all out on Christmas. Oh, my gosh. They didn't get a whole lot of things during the year, but when it came to Christmas, the tree was loaded with things underneath. You know, we just did it. And it didn't have to be expensive things. It was just things, you know, that we knew they would like, and very often learning games or something. But we went all out for that. The whole day was revolving around the turkey dinner that we had again that day and opening the presents. And the presents could last for hours and hours and hours. And the reason why, you know, it wasn't that many presents, but there were four of us. And each one would open a present, and we'd all sit around and watch as that person opened. And if it happened, and then we had to ooh and ah over it. And if it happened to be a book, Charlotte's Web, then we all started talking about, oh, that's such a good story, and I wonder what's going to happen with the web and Charlotte and all, you know. So we'd have conversations, and then the next person would open up a gift, and it was a fish magazine, you know, or maybe some kind of a ornament for a fish tank. My son used to have like 10 to 13 fish tanks in his bedroom. That he oversaw all different kinds of sea life and aquarium life. So, you know, then we'd have to discuss that, and sometimes you'd have to go upstairs and put it in just right then. And so that's why it took forever and ever and ever, you know. Or we'd get a game, and then we'd stop and play the game or something like that. You know, so that's why it was just all focused on the kids that day and the family and whatever was there under the tree. Just, you know, if you got a sweater, you had to go model it. You know, in fact, even after the kids, in 2004 Christmas was the last Christmas that David and I had together where we really gave each other presents, and that was right before his brain injury. And that year, I had a themed present for David, and they were all running clothes, gym clothes. So he always ran 20 miles a week at least, you know. And so I got him some really, we lived in right outside of New York City. So it was cold in the winter in January and February, March, April, May. It was cold. And so I got him, you know, running pants and socks and jacket and you know, the wool ones and the microfiber ones and everything. Well, I said, David, you've got to tie him on, you know, so he went and put on his jacket and his pants, and he was running up and down the hallway, and I was snapping those pictures. Those are pictures that are in my book. And those were the last pictures of a Christmas that we spent under normal circumstances. But, you know, that's why I'm saying it takes us a long time, because we would just do, we would enjoy every gift. And really, you know, I've been to some celebrations where everybody has their pile of presents and they all start opening and nobody knows what anybody got, you know, because nobody shared and they just opened and put it aside and opened another one, and everybody was doing this at the same time. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You do that, you do all that stuff, and you don't even get to enjoy it. So anyhow, that's how we did it. Well, despite all that, to get all of that ready so that we could do all those fun things with the kids on that day and give them one of the best days of, you know, their year. And so, yeah, it's just the going out. I remember one night, Kirsten was very little. I think she was only about maybe six, seven. And we had gotten her a dollhouse. We had a friend of ours built it, and we had to paint it, and we had to outfit it, you know, and everything. So I was putting carpets in it and putting little things on the wall for decoration and all that. And, oh, my gosh, we were up till 5:30 in the morning to get that ready. And we had a two-year-old or less, one-year-old, and we knew he was going to get up at 6 in the morning. So we, it was a sleepless night, that one. But getting it done in time. So, yeah, there's a lot of stress that goes with the holidays. Do we do it now? No, we don't. I have some little trees that I can put up. I can take them out of a box, walk them to my living room, plop them on the floor, pull down the arms of the tree. The ornaments are still on it. Do I do it? No, very rarely. Nobody comes over. It's just David and me here. So it's like, why bother? So anyhow, that's one of the things. So what I was going to get to was prioritizing. So what do you do? What kind of things do you do to make your holiday a nice one without stressing yourself out? Because it's essential. Prioritizing is essential for getting through the holidays, deciding on which activities are most important and when the best time to do them is. So I'm better at night, so I can accomplish more then. But I think most people probably work better during the daytime, and I think whatever is your best, that's the time that you should use. So, and another thing is making reasonable goals to help lower your stress. And Christina, a friend of mine, says, she's a caregiver. And so she's always keeping a careful eye on things around her house. And she's been on my show, and she tells a really funny story about Thanksgiving, which you're going to have to go find Christina Hopkins, so listen to that show. But she says that she and her husband take one day at a time. She says that she and her husband go shopping together, but they go at the off times when it's not so busy in the stores. And what I found is if you go around dinner time, the stores are cleared out a lot, folks. You know, people go home and get their dinners on the table. Their husbands are coming home. Their wives are coming home. Both of them are coming home. You know, families are getting together to sit down for a dinner, and they're not in the store. So that's a good time to go, just to, you know, give you a heads up. And if you're a later person like I am, going at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock when the kids are in bed. Moms and dads are tucked in to their couches in the evening. The stores aren't so busy then. So those are the times that I head out to try to get things done. So, or another thing you could do is plan shorter shopping trips when you're out and to keep things more sane, especially at this time of the year. So, Deb, what are your thoughts on prioritizing and pacing or reasonable goals?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I was one of these people who, wherever I traveled, I'd bring presents. I love giving. I love giving people stuff. It's just a thing that I really enjoy doing.
Uh-huh.
I love presents. I mean, I enjoy getting them, but in terms of giving them away, I really have a blast with that and seeing their reactions, assuming they're not going to give that fake smile. But in general, I just love giving presents. And so whenever I visit people, I bring them presents. On holidays, I bring presents, you know, or buy presents. And after the brain injury, the first few years, I couldn't. Between poor organizational skills, dealing with neurofatigue, all that stuff, I just couldn't. I couldn't get organized enough to get presents. Going shopping was really tough because of the sensory overload issues, so I just didn't do it. And then it took me a while, a few more years, to figure it out. I still don't do as much as I used to. But now if I see something, I think I will get it. And I keep it until there's an occasion. But I'm a little bit... I'm a little bit impatient with that. So to have a present sitting on the side waiting for that occasion, I'm really not good at that. And every so often I'll go, I have to give you something now, you know. But in general, I spread out the gifts until I see something that looks good. I don't go shopping for gifts. I just don't do that. I can't.
Yeah.
Now, here's another thing is I used to be very careful about wrapping presents. I just don't anymore. Yeah. You know, I'll say someone will give me a present with a beautiful wrapping. I'll say, sorry, I don't wrap. And you know, maybe it's less exciting. I don't know. But that's as good as it gets as far as I'm concerned. So I just learned what my limitations are with that kind of thing. And as you say, you learn to pace yourself. And you learn not to worry so much about what people think, that's for sure.
And I think that's something that also comes as you get older and you realize what things are important and what things really aren't. And when you're talking about wrapping presents, my way of giving David a present is they're all in one great big huge bag and they're out in the living room and I'll take it to his office. I'll go get one present, hold it behind my back and say, which hand? And they're not wrapped at all. And then I'll go back to the living room and get another one. Does he care? No. You know, and the other thing I do too, and this is kind of weird, but I always give presents to my nieces because we always go to their house for Christmas since we've moved to the desert. And so since they've been about, I guess, 3 years old, I've been bringing presents every year. And, but I always, you know, and all I do is put them in a bag, you know, one of those pretty bags from the dollar store, you know, gift bags with some tissue paper in it. And I'll put their presents in there and they take the present out and get ooh and ah over it. And then I say, may I have the bag back for next year? I know. I mean, I could go get another bag at the dollar store. It's not the end of the world, you know. But it's just like, okay, I'm going to take that bag, and that's their bag. And they get that same bag next year, one of the two. They're twins. So they get to choose whichever hand they want, whatever bag is in it. But, you know, I'm doing a little environmental saving, too. But that's not the reason why I do it. It's just like, okay, I'll take the bag back and fill it next time, because why not? So anyhow. And they know that's going to happen. You know, in the beginning, I think they thought that was a little funny. But they know that's going to happen. You know, and they just automatically give me the bag back and they know what they're going to get it again. So, but in order to get through holidays, and you were just talking about it, you're not doing so well on the organizing part. Now, I was going to ask you a little bit about that. Maybe this thing that Christina was talking about will prompt something, but maybe not. But planning and organizing, you know, it's a key to making life easier and more manageable. And I'm not just talking holidays. I'm talking any time. Making lists and checking them twice helps to keep me on target. Lists can serve multiple of purposes, but two for sure. They can help to keep you organized, but they can also give you a sense of accomplishment as you cross off the completed tasks. Now, organizing the list helps to visually see which tasks are most important. So Christina says that she writes out small lists of things that she and her family need to do daily. And I think Christina's key word is small in big caps, S-M-A-L-L, small. Do things in small chunks. Make short lists, and you will see accomplishments. Make a long list, and you become overwhelmed. I can guarantee you that. I know that from just me. But then I think, wait a minute, I should be taking my own advice here because my daily to-do list is growing longer than my legs. You know, yes, I know it should be arm, but my list already exceeds the length of my arm. It's like it goes on and on. So maybe that is why I feel completely overwhelmed. And it seems that each day, as I try to tackle something on my list, two or more things come in that are even more important than the ones already there. And my list grows and grows and grows. And just now I'm groaning. And I don't see the improvement. So I'm not sure I should be offering advice here, seriously. But small lists really do help. And if you keep a running tally and cross off the things you'll accomplish, I think you'll get the satisfaction of seeing your accomplishments. That's what I'm thinking. So, what do you think, Deb? I know you say you have a hard time with organizing, but what do you do to help yourself?
Actually, it's interesting because, yes, like you said, keep lists short. It's very important. And I was told, keep it down to 2 items, 3, and you'll get overwhelmed. And at first I thought that was silly. Of course, 3 is fine, but it's not. 3 things, it overwhelms me. 2, I'm fine. But one thing that a friend of mine, Judy, suggested is to do a done list. Because one of the things that for the longest time was a problem for me was I'd feel like I'm not getting enough done. I'd get really upset with myself and frustrated. And she suggested that I do a done list. Every time I do something, mark it off. And that really helped enormously, even if it meant taking a rest, taking a nap. Put that down on the list as done. So that's also a chore or a task that you should take care of. Because as a brain injury survivor, you need to rest. So if you're resting instead of, making a table, you know what? It's okay. The table can wait. But you needed that rest. So you did what you needed to do. And that should go on that list. And that was enormous for me. Once I realized that, because I'd go, I'm not getting enough writing during the day because I need to nap. I'm just going to put that down. And psychologically, it sounds silly, but that's going to make a difference. But it does. It really does. So a done list is was very helpful to me. Now, because of my memory, I don't always remember to do that. But when I do, it's really helped me to view naps differently. It's not it's not time that is wasted. It's time that I need.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to jump in on that, too, because I do what I call my regular old to-do list. And what I do is I'll put all the things down that I can read. You know, I'm not being really good about it right now, but there was a time where I was really good, and I would list everything that I needed to do, even if it's something small. And I didn't ever put rest down or anything like that, but maybe send a check to my son for such and such a money because I owed him something, or make an appointment with the doctor, or pay this bill, or whatever it might be. And I would put that on my list under months. I always did mine with months. And if I didn't finish something in 1 month, it moved up to the next month. It just automatically copy and paste and moved it up. Once I finished something, I highlighted it in green. I put a check mark in the front of it so it got indented as well. And I put the date on it when I finished it. So now that stays with me. I've got a list for years that goes on. And it stays with me so that if I need to check something, and I did recently, I got a bill from AAA saying that I didn't pay my bill. And I said, but I know I paid my bill. And I went to my to-do list, and there it was, the day that I paid it. So then I was able to go back to my bank account and say, yes, I did pay it. So that was a record-keeping for me as well. And even though it's green, I don't ever go back to look at it again. I don't have to worry about it anymore because it was done. But it was there when I needed as proof that I, you know, to send me to my proof that I paid the bill, and I was able to get the problem solved much easier than it would have been had I had to go to the bank or do something more. So that works really, really well for me. It's just I'm having a problem with getting everything down because I feel like, well, that's taking me too long to write everything down on my list that I need to get done. I need to just go do it. But I will do like when we're writing our book and I say I've got my homework. I have to clean up chapter 10. I have to read chapter 11. I have to send it to Deb. All of that goes on this list. And when it happens, it goes green, gets a check, and puts a date, and I know it's done so that I can always don't have to go back and think, did I do that or didn't I, and go searching through files. So that's one of the things that has been working for me. We're running out of time, Deb, but we're getting there. We talked a little bit about the Christmas tree and changing traditions, so altering your traditions to make it fit for you. I talked about how we did everything when the kids were little, you know, the glitz and glam that we did for them. But now it's much, much quieter for us, and we don't even bother with a tree. I still will make a dinner, but we go out for Christmas Day to, again, the family, and Christmas Eve to another part of the family. Same family, just different house. And New Year's Eve, we stay home. David and I just stay home and do just a quiet little thing, but we'll end up watching a movie, which we do every single night. So we've altered our traditions. We're not going out to parties like we used to and that sort of thing. It's just you do what you need to do to make yourself comfortable. Okay, hang on just a second here. And so that's one of the things we do, is altering traditions. And then I just kind of closed out my notes, trying to save them, and they just got closed right out on here. Let me see if I can open notes again. I'm not sure I can even find them. Oh, I know where they are. Hang on. Because I like to have them there so I know what I'm going to be talking about, and then I haven't talked about something already. So, okay, let's go here. Okay, so I think my last topic was going to be avoiding the holidays. Okay, that's the last. If you really need to avoid the holidays, then that's what you do. Some folks entirely, you know, skip them. And frankly, that's kind of like what happens when we get to New Year's Eve. I'm kind of skipping it. You know, we're not acknowledging what everyone else is doing. I'm not watching any ball drop. I'm not doing any fireworks. I'm not hanging out with people and singing auld lang syne, whatever it is. We just hang out by ourselves and just, I do get, sometimes I'll get some sausage and crackers and cheese, and we'll sit on the floor in front of our fireplace, and that's, you know, at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and then we go watch a movie, and then 12 o'clock slips through, and it's like, okay, it's 10 after 12, time to go to bed, you know. So, yeah, so we do that. Sometimes holidays are just too hard to deal with, and Daz says it's best to ignore it all. And Gio says he tries to avoid as much holiday cheer as he can because he feels the holidays are depressing. And it's hard for him to see family members who have everything that he'll never have. So, yeah, it becomes a little bit difficult there. So I know for me, I used to watch the ball drop when we lived on the East Coast with family. And I would, you know, we'd watch the ball drop and everybody starts singing Auld Lang Syne, and Donna would have tears coming down. Like, what? Why? Or I'd be at a party, at a dance, you know, and instead of being when everybody's counting down 3, 2, 1, I'd be out on the phone, on a pay phone, not a pay phone, but yeah, I guess maybe it was, cause in the hallway, because this was a long time ago, calling my kids to wish them a Happy New Year when they were, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, so I was missing it anyway. So I think that's some of the times the things you just need to just stop. So on that note, Deb, it is almost time to close out. So I want to thank all my contributors to this show, which were Rachel and Katie and Christina was on, and Gio and Daz, I'm sorry if I missed your name, but we're running out of time to get everything in. So I want to thank Deb for sure for being on this show. It was always fun to hang out and chat with you and talk about these important topics. And that the holidays are approaching, that you do enjoy them as much as you can and within reason. And if you don't want to do something, you just don't do it. That's what I think. So on that note, I want to say, Deb Brandon, thank you so much for joining me tonight and talking about the season to be jolly, even with a brain injury. And how do we get through it? That's what we do. How do we get through it? So you can always learn more about Deb Brandon on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just in that right sidebar, put in the search box Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, and tons of things will come up within a minute. You can also go to debbrandon.com to learn more about Deb. And remember, I told you there was another book coming out. I bet she has out. If you can check out there. On my blog, there's a category for brain injury resources, a category for itty-bitty giant steps. Of course, there are the major categories of interviews for caregivers and survivors. So go check them out. There, I know that there are almost 200 of them up there, too. 160 to 200, that's close. Something like that. So, yeah, so happy 200th show. That's what I want to say to me today. And on the next show will be Crystal Fairless is going to come on and talk about caregiver burnout. Yeah, it's a real thing, folks. So come on and listen in. And don't forget to tune in every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time to listen to Lisa Dreyer. She's the host of Mess with MS. And, yeah, so don't, if you hated my show, tell 10 of your enemies. If you loved it, tell 10 of your friends. I will see you again on December 17th, which is my father's birthday, and my birthday is coming up in just 4 days.
Happy birthday.
That's good. Thank you. Okay, Q. Anyhow. So I'll see everybody. Thanks, Deb, so much for joining tonight. It's been a pleasure. And I'll see
everybody on
December 17th. Tonight, enjoy whatever holiday or holidays that you're going to be in spending. Do the best you can and do only what you can. But enjoy whatever you can. All right, all. Good night. See you all in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.